weren't pleased, and the initial phone call from me to senior officials at PricewaterhouseCoopers wasn't very pleasant.
An accounting firm bungles Alaskans' personal data. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 28th of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the quirky burden of a tricky last name in the national spotlight.
I think it's like I'm Madonna or Cher or something. I'm just the one namer.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The personal information of more than 77,000 Alaskans is missing, and officials are concerned that it might have been the result of identity theft. The people involved were teachers, state employees, or retirees in 2004 or earlier. Attorney General Daniel Sullivan says accountants with Price Waterhouse Coopers were doing contract work for the state in a lawsuit against Mercer Incorporated, the state's retirement system's former actuary. Price Waterhouse Coopers has accepted responsibility for the lost documents and has agreed to cover the cost of protecting those whose information could have been compromised. Sullivan says the company will pay for credit monitoring or credit security freezes, and it will reimburse any Alaskans for losses as a result of the security breach. He says there's no indication that any of the information has been misused.
A number of times these cases, nothing bad happens, but we're acting out of an abundance of caution. And to be honest, we're hoping that the firm who misplaced this finds it. And that's still very much a possibility, and we have been working very diligently with them to make sure they are looking at every possibility of where this information might be.
Price Waterhouse Coopers found out in early December that it was missing the information, which contained names, birth dates, and social security numbers of those in the state system. Sullivan says they only notified the state of the loss last week.
Well, let's just say when I heard about it and understood when they originally knew about it, that it wasn't, we weren't pleased, and the initial phone call from me to senior officials at PricewaterhouseCoopers wasn't very pleasant.
All of those whose names were on the missing documents will be notified by the Department of Administration, detailing what they can do for their own protection. An 800 number has also been set up to handle concerns. That number is 1-800-821-2251. More information has also been posted to the Department of Administration's website at doa.alaska.gov. President Obama's message in last night's State of the Union address of more jobs and incentives for small businesses struck a chord with Alaska's congressional delegation. The commander-in-chief also singled out opening up new offshore areas to oil and gas development, a line met with standing applause by both Alaska's senators.
To create more of these clean energy jobs, we need more production, more efficiency, more incentives. And that means building a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants in this country. It means making tough decisions about opening new offshore areas for oil and gas development.
APRN's Libby Casey reports on the delegation's response.
Alaska's Democratic Senator Mark Begich says the president hit the right tone in his speech and touched on many of Begich's own goals, including tax credits for college and education reform focused on math and science.
I'm telling you, if you look at what he talked about in education, it's exactly what we campaigned on. I mean, if you take our policy statements on the small business, the energy, the education, and the military, It's almost a replica of what we've been hammering away on.
Begich especially approves of the president's call to eliminate all capital gains taxes on small business investment and his proposal to take $30 billion of TARP money that Wall Street banks have paid back and send it to community banks for small business loans. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski agrees that the president managed to reach out to the American people in his speech and connect over concerns about jobs and the economy. But she's wary about the specifics of his small business goals and does not want to see TARP money reused. Instead, she wants it to help pay down the national debt. Both senators applauded the president's energy items. Senator Begich says Obama prioritized energy development and innovation.
When I ran, I remember what people were saying over and over again. You know, Mark Begich wins, President Obama wins, oil drilling in Alaska will be shut down. Well, Chukchi Sea is moving forward. That's why I see Norway, the company from Norway, investing in it. Beaufort Sea is moving forward. The president now mentioned his OCS. He recognizes the value of it in a longer-term energy plan.
Murkowski says she was pleased to hear President Obama single out offshore drilling and nuclear power. She also notes he sounded like he's not going to try and push a cap-and-trade bill through the Senate, something Murkowski doubts will happen.
He urged us to pass a comprehensive energy and climate bill. But there was no mention of cap and trade. There was no real sense of urgency on the climate issue itself.
Despite finding some common ground with the president, Murkowski says she was disappointed to hear him ask Congress to resume talks over the Democratic-led health care bill, and she wanted to hear more about fighting terrorism.
There's an awful lot of people in this country who are quite anxious about our national security issues and the terrorism threat. And I didn't get the impression from my listen that he perhaps gave as much focus or attention as he might have in those areas.
In contrast, Begich says the president provided strong comments on military success in Iraq and emphasized caring for veterans returning home. But Alaska's Republican Representative Don Young has big concerns about Obama's approach to the war in Afghanistan. He says despite widespread Republican support for the war, he's against what's happening there now.
People keep in mind, Alexander the Great couldn't conquer Afghanistan. That's history. Russians did, tried 10 years to do it. They couldn't do it. Can we be of assistance? Maybe in Pakistan. But this is an area that's going to be undisciplined and not controlled by anyone. And that's a tremendous amount of money.
Young says instead of focusing on Afghanistan, the administration should seriously tackle the deficit and boost the economy through development. Young says he applauds the president's call for a spending freeze on discretionary items, but it doesn't go nearly far enough. The congressman did not attend the State of the Union and told APRN he planned to watch it on TV.
I will probably watch some of it, let's put it that way. And it depends on how well it goes. And I have only gone to two State of the Union addresses since I have been a congressman, because I'm an old hunter. And it's when you have the president, the vice president, the speaker of the House, the president of the Senate, the joint chiefs of staff, the Supreme Court, diplomatic corps, and everybody together under one roof. It always gives me great concern.
Besides, Young says, on TV, he sees all the responses and feedback of his colleagues, the cheering or not cheering, and then the analysis of what happens next. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
President Obama gave Congress a stern warning last night in his State of the Union address to quit playing politics, especially when it comes to confirming his nominees.
The confirmation of well-qualified public servants shouldn't be held hostage to the pet projects or grudges of a few individual senators.
The president's comments mirrored those of Senator Mark Begich, who has complained this week about the slow going for the man appointed U.S. Marshal for Alaska, former Anchorage Police Chief Rob Hewn. Hewn sailed through the Senate Judiciary Committee last week and went to the full Senate for confirmation. His name was on the calendar last Friday, but did not come up for a vote. Holds can be placed anonymously, so there are no details available about what's blocking Hewn's vote. The office of the Senate's top Democrat, Nevada's Harry Reid, says it's safe to say someone is holding up his confirmation. Reid's Deputy Communications Director Regan LaChapel says if you look at the Senate executive calendar, there are lots of names waiting for a vote.
My nominee has been pending for quite some time. It's pretty clear that somebody, some senator, has a hold on that nominee or is preventing it from moving forward.
LaChapel says her office hopes that since the president mentioned political posturing in his State of the Union address, the nominations might advance. A North Slope oil spill has been reported from the same pipeline that froze and ruptured in November, leaking 46,000 gallons of crude oil and oily water. Steve Reinhart, a spokesman for Lisburn oil field contractor BP Exploration, says the new leak reported Wednesday is estimated at less than one barrel, which consists of 42 gallons. He says the leak had stopped by the time it was discovered at an elevated section of the 18-inch flow line during a regular inspection. The material splattered over a 2,000-square-foot area, landing on the edge of a nearby drill pad and the tundra below it. The cause is unknown. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a lucrative opportunity for Sitka.
I mean, the worst case is the city of Sitka is going to collect one heck of a lot of money.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you file your PFD online, your donation through Pick, Click, and Give can make a huge difference in the lives of Alaskans. Your contribution can lend a hand to Alaskans worried about their next meal or help children who suffer abuse and neglect. Your generosity can help provide shelter for a homeless Alaskan whose average age is just 9 years old. Go to pickclickgive.org and select your favorite cause and be the person who sets it all in motion. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
True Alaska Bottling Company has been trying since 2006 to tap into water at Blue Lake near Sitka and sell it in bulk. Doing so could mean big money for the city. On Tuesday, the Sitka Assembly gave the company more time to get the plan moving. But as KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, the Assembly made a few changes to the deal and asked a lot of questions.
Under the agreement approved by the Assembly, True Alaska Bottling, or TAB, retains its rights to market, export, and sell water from Blue Lake in bulk amounts. We're talking about loading it into a tanker and shipping it to a customer, in this case, the government of Iraq, where drinking water is not terribly easy to come by. In order for TAB to get the extended deal, the city made changes to its agreement. The company now agrees to sell more water than originally planned, some 50 million gallons in a year's time, up from 20 million gallons. And it has to pay the money it owes to the city, $58,000, which city officials say is in the process of being transferred. It also has to make an upfront payment of $100,000, and here's the big one.
We've talked to TAB, and they've agreed to do away with exclusivity, where anybody else that came in that wanted to purchase bulk water had to go through those folks first.
That's Sitka Economic Development Association Executive Director Gary White. He's been negotiating with TAB on the city's behalf. Other companies have been calling him, interested in selling bulk water out of Blue Lake, and he says allowing those companies to compete for the water is a big advantage for Sitka.
It keeps TAB honest, it keeps TAB moving fast to get this done because they want to be there first.
That's because of another part of the deal. The company that can get the water moving first gets the rights to the most water. All right, so Sitka has a bunch of water to sell. TAB is willing to give the city a penny per gallon for that water, but that rate, a penny per gallon, is locked in for at least 6 years. After that, the price can be adjusted based on inflation. But that raised an interesting question at the assembly table. What if the value of water goes up during those first 6 years? Will the city get its money's worth? Is a penny per gallon a good price to live with for that many years? Again, Gary White.
A cent a gallon's pretty high from the research I've done everywhere else that people are buying water for. Not necessarily in bulk, but when tapping someone's watershed, we're talking pennies of or percentage of pennies.
As for the future, TAB Chief Executive Terry Trapp says it's hard to predict where the value will be.
The value to the city, of course, is that if it's a minimum of 1 billion gallons a year, that's $10 million to the city. If they would like to take the full allocation of 3 billion gallons, would be $30 million a year to the city of Sitka. So I mean, the worst case is the city of Sitka is going to collect one heck of a lot of money.
The city will own the pipe from Blue Lake to the Sawmill Cove Industrial Park, but Assemblymember Mim McConnell asked for clarification on the infrastructure needed to get the water from that pipe into a ship. In other words, will it be a public faucet or a private faucet? Gary White.
One group's talking about bringing a 79-million-gallon tanker here, and the guy's talking about bringing an 84-million-gallon tanker. I don't know if, you know, what size hose or connection valves needed. It's just impossible for us to build. So for us to move forward, what the contract currently states is that they're responsible for putting it in.
So TAB builds it, and from there, things are up for negotiation. The city can build its own and require the water companies to use it, but Silver Bay is also kind of small for there to be multiple hookups floating around out there. The bottom line, White says, is that anything the companies negotiate in terms of infrastructure will have to come before the assembly again. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Anchorage Economic Development Corporation released its annual economic forecast for 2010 yesterday. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Nearly 1,400 packed the AEDC luncheon at the Denina Convention and Civic Center to hear a series of descriptions and predictions about Anchorage's economy in 2010. In his 2010 forecast report, Anchorage Economic Development Corporation President and CEO Bill Popp said the recession pain of 2009 would extend into the new year.
For 2010, AEDC today forecasts a loss of 1,200 jobs, or an 0.8% reduction in total average jobs from 2009.
Although not enough to offset the overall job loss, the corporation's forecast also predicted a likely return to job growth late in the year. Pop then looked at the various segments of the Anchorage economy.
Employment is expected to grow in the healthcare sector. Employment in the oil and gas, government, and business and professional services sectors are expected to remain flat at 2009 levels in 2010. AEDC anticipates job declines in the leisure and hospitality sector, construction, trade, and transportation sectors in the coming year.
Translating that general view into predicted numbers, healthcare jobs will increase by 200. Government employment, which increased by 600 last year, will remain at just over 31,000 jobs in 2010. Business and professional services will continue at 18,600 jobs. Oil and gas industry jobs should be steady in the Anchorage area, but will drop statewide. Because many of those workers live in Anchorage, those layoffs could impact the local economy. Airline and transportation will fall by 200 jobs, retail by 300, and construction, which lost 500 jobs last year, will lose another 400 jobs. And the prediction says hotels, restaurants, and other businesses related to tourism will be down 500 jobs in 2010. Besides its economic forecast for Anchorage, the Development Corporation also released the results of its Business Confidence Survey. Pop said, in general, Anchorage businesses felt a little more confident about 2010 than they did in 2009, and the confidence index at just under 54% showed them more positive than negative about the future. It also appears that respondents often felt better about the prospects for their particular businesses than for the Anchorage economy as a whole.
Respondents to the Business Confidence Survey anticipate increases in gross sales, net profits, and capital expenditures. The outlook for employment, though, was slightly down for 2009. Overall, survey participants still expect a decrease in Anchorage's economy in 2010.
Nearly 60% of the Confidence Business Survey participants listed health insurance costs as the most significant barrier to growth. 50% cited federal regulations as a significant or moderate problem. Like last year, almost half decried the scarcity of professional or technical workers available in the local job market. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Sea Alaska Corporation says alleged threats made by its board chairman will not derail efforts to get a land selection bill through Congress. Albert Kukesh, also a state senator, was part of a corporate delegation visiting a recent Craig City Council meeting. Sealeska officials pushed local leaders to support its proposed takeover of valuable timberlands on Prince of Wales Island. Kukesh angered some by suggesting state funding for city projects could be tied to support for the bill. In an interview with Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld, Sealeska CEO Chris McNeil says the comment was unfortunate, but it wasn't a threat.
We recognize it was an artful statement, and I think it was misinterpreted. But, you know, there's a lot of passion involved in this. There's passion on our side of it. We want to get our land entitlement done after these 40 years or so, and there are other points of view.
Is Board Chairman Kukesh going to change his role at all in this as a result of what he said in Craig?
I don't expect so. As the chairman of the board, you know, he's our policy leader for these types of efforts, and I expect that that will continue.
Kukesh has not commented on his statements to Craig City Council. That's because he expects to face legislative ethics charges for his comments. The land selection bill would transfer 65,000 to 85,000 acres of Tongass National Forest to the corporation. In exchange, Sealeska would give up claims to other lands it could select without congressional action.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
Olympic announcers are used to pronouncing tricky names. They are dealing with athletes from all over the world, after all. But in Vancouver next month, Alaska's own Kalyn Chythluk-Sifsoff might test even the most seasoned TV and radio pro. The Girdwood snowboarder says she's not worried about hearing her consonant-heavy, syllable-rich last name butchered in front of an international audience. She says announcers tend to play it safe when they encounter her name, and that's just fine with her.
Usually when people are announcing, they all fumbled up on the last name, so they just, like, don't even say it. And a lot of times there'll be, you know, there's four people on the course, and the announcer will be announcing their name, and they'll say, oh, here comes Lindsay Jacobellis and Faye Galini and Kalyn. So I think like Madonna or Cher or something, and just a one-namer.
Chythluk-Sifsoff is hoping to medal in the dangerous event of snowboard cross. She came back this season from a severe knee injury she suffered a little over a year ago. She steadily improved in the standings this winter and ended up grabbing the last Olympic spot in her event. If she doesn't make the podium this year, she is already looking forward to the 2014 Games in Sochi, Russia. In the season of dog mushing, skiing, and ice hockey, Homer has its own tradition of friendly wintertime competition, racing cars around a frozen lake. KBBI's Aaron Selvig has the story.
To say ice racing on Beluga Lake is a Homer tradition would be an understatement. The winter Sundays spent revving engines, speeding behemoth automotive monstrosities around an oval of ice, and filling the chilled winter air with man-made thunder is, well, an institution so old nobody is exactly sure how old it is. At least 55 years, say the old-timers who have been at this peculiar and expensive hobby for years. Last Sunday, on a beautiful sun-drenched afternoon on a frozen lake, the 2010 season of the Homer Ice Racing Association began. Stacy Murphy, who drives a fearsome black modified car known as the Ice Angel, didn't have as good a luck. In her second race of the day, Murphy blew her motor.
I came out of turn four and it was gone. Phil said that white smoke billowed out the back, nobody could see me, and I thought I lost a driveline, but realized then there was no power and it just made awful noises, and it was done.
These drivers, many of whom race with their families, are competitive, but they're also a tight-knit bunch. Back in the pit area after her engine blew, Murphy had several of her rivals offer her a replacement. She plans to have the Ice Angel back in action next week. Back at the starting line, it's time for the pitman race, where crew members get their turn behind the wheel. After a warm-up lap around the oval, they're off. After seven laps around the track, Mike Bailey crosses the finish line first. For the first day of racing, Bailey says he's pretty happy with how his car is running.
Tip top, great way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
The car is set up pretty good. Just good luck, good brakes.
There's one stock car, however, actually a 1979 Toyota truck, that's not doing so hot. Lagging in last place, struggling to maintain traction on the slippery surface. The truck is rusty and doesn't appear to be sponsored by any local businesses. It has a lucky number 13 spray painted in white on its doors. The owners turn out to be a trio of Anchor Point gearheads, Greg Murray, Bob Picard, and Kyle Martin, who have wanted for years to get involved in ice racing and were finally able to get in on the fun this year. The truck, says Murray, has a few small problems that need to be ironed out.
It's doing okay. It's hard to compete with the front-wheel drive cars, but we're going to get a little better traction in the rear, maybe some more weight. If we can hook up on the corners around the back corners, we'll be able to keep up with them.
Like most of the other cars, says Picard, the Toyota pickup has a name for good luck.
Well, I think we call it the Anchor Clanker.
Anchor Clunker.
You know, Obama's Clunkers? This is one of Obama's Clunkers. He wouldn't give us $4,500 for it, though.
Yeah.
We'd take it.
Newcomers and old-timers alike seem to be having a blast racing their clunkers on the lake. Murphy says Sunday's first official races sent the 2010 ice racing season off in style.
It looks like it was a really great day. There was some really aggressive driving today.
As the afternoon winds down and the sun begins to dip toward the horizon, the 30 or so gathered Homer ice racing fans, huddled in their own vehicles to ward off the cold, show their appreciation for the show. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selvig.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Ronco in Sitka, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA. The Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Sign up to participate in one of our information sessions to be held the week of January 25th by calling 297-2827 or visit rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.